9. "So we aren't sure yet what happened," Waxillium said, sitting on the floor beside the long sheet of paper covered with his genealogical results. The words of founding included a reference to 2 more metals and their alloys. But the ancients believed in 16 metals, and the law of 16 holds so strongly in nature that it can't be disregarded. Either harmony changed the way that allomancy itself works, or we never really understood it.
"Hmm,"
Marcy said, sitting on the floor with her knees to the side.
"I would not have expected that from you, Lord Waxillium. Lawman I had anticipated. Metallurgist, perhaps. But philosopher?"
"There is a link between being a lawman and a philosopher," Waxillium said, smiling idly. "Lawkeeping and philosophy are both about questions. I was drawn to law by a need to find the answers nobody else could, to capture the men everyone considered uncatchable. Philosophy is similar. Questions, secrets, puzzles. The human mind and the nature of the universe. The 2 great riddles of time." She nodded thoughtfully. "What was it for you?" Waxillium asked. "One does not often meet a young woman of means studying law."
"My means are not so meaningful as they may seem at first," she said. "I would be nothing without my uncle's patronage."
"Still."
"Stories," she said, smiling wistfully. "Stories of the good and the evil. Most people you meet, they aren't quite either one."
Waxillium frowned. "I'd disagree. Most people seem basically good."
"Well, perhaps by one definition. But it seems that either one, good or evil, has to be pursued for it to be significant. People today, it seems they are good, or sometimes evil, mostly by inertia, not by choice. They act as their surroundings prepare them to act. It's like, well, think of a world where everything is lit with the same modest light. All places, outside or inside, lit by a uniform light that cannot be changed. If, in this world of common light, someone suddenly produced a light that was significantly brighter, it would be remarkable. By the same token, if someone managed to create a room that was dim, it would be remarkable. In a way, it doesn't matter how strong the initial illumination was. The story works regardless."
"The fact that most people are decent does not make their decency any less valuable to society."
"Yes, yes," she said, blushing. "And I'm not saying I wish that everyone were less decent. But those bright lights and those dim places fascinate me, Lord Waxillium, particularly when they're dramatically out of order. Why is it that, in one instance, a man raised in a basically good family, surrounded by basically good friends, with good employment and satisfactory means, starts strangling women with copper wires and sinking their bodies in the canals? And conversely, consider that most men who go to the roughs adapt to the general climate of lax sensibilities there. But some others, a few remarkable individuals, determine to bring civilization with them. 100 men, convinced by society that everybody does it this way, will go along with the most crude and despicable of acts. But one man says no."
"It's really not as heroic as all that," Waxillium said.
"I'm certain it doesn't look that way to you.
Have you ever heard the story of the first man I brought in?" She blushed.
Yes. Yes. Let's just say that I've heard it. Perret the Black. A rapist and an allomancer. Pewter arm, I believe. You walked into the lawkeeper station, looked at the board, ripped his picture off, and took it with you. Came back 3 days later with him over the saddle of your horse. Of all the men on the board, you picked the most difficult, most dangerous criminal of the bunch."
"He was worth the most money." Marcy frowned. "I looked at that board," Waxillium said, "and I thought to myself, well, any of these blokes is right likely to kill me, so I might as well pick the one worth the most. I needed the money. I hadn't had anything to eat in 3 days but jerky and a few beans. And then there was Tarako.
One of the great bandits of our era.
With him, Waxillium said, I figured I could get some new boots. He'd robbed a cobbler just a few days earlier, and I thought if I brought the man in, I might manage to get a new pair of boots out of it.
I thought you'd picked him because he'd shot a lawkeeper over in Faradom the week before.
Waxillium shook his head. I didn't hear that until after I brought him in.
Oh.
Then, remarkably, she smiled in eagerness.
And Harisel Hard?
A bet with Wayne, Waxillium said. You don't look disappointed.
This just makes it more real, Lord Waxillium, she said.
Her eager eyes glittered in an almost predatory way.
I need to write these down.
She fished in her handbag, pulling out a pad and pencil. So that's what motivated you? Waxillium asked as she scribbled notes. You study out of a desire to be a hero? Like in the stories?
No, no, she said. I just wanted to learn about them.
Are you sure? He said. You could become a lawkeeper, go out to the roughs, live these same stories. Don't think that you can't because you're a woman. High society might lead you to believe that, but it doesn't matter out beyond the mountains. Out there, you don't have to wear lacy dresses or smell like flowers. You can belt on some revolvers and make your own rules. Don't forget, the Ascendant Warrior herself was a woman. She leaned forward.
Can I admit something to you, Lord Waxillium?
Only if it's salacious, personal, or embarrassing. She smiled.
I like the lacy dresses and smelling like flowers. I like living in the city, where I can demand modern conveniences. Do you realize I can send for terrace food at any hour of the night and have it delivered?
Incredible. It actually was. He hadn't realized that was possible.
As much as I like reading about the roughs, and though I may like to visit, I don't think I'd take well to living there. I don't mix well with dirt, grime, and an overall lack of personal hygiene.
She leaned in.
And, to be perfectly honest, I have no problem at all letting men like you be the ones to belt on revolvers and shoot people. Does that make me a terrible traitor to my sex?
I don't think so. You are pretty good at shooting things, though.
Well, shooting things is okay. But people?
She shivered.
I know the Ascendant Warrior is a model for self-actualized women. We have classes on it at the university for preservation's sake, and her legacy is written into the law. But I don't really want to put on trousers and be her. I feel like a coward for admitting it sometimes.
It's all right, he said. You have to be yourself. But none of that explains why you are studying law.
Oh, I do want to change the city, she said, growing eager. Though I feel that tracking down every criminal and punching holes in them with pieces of metal moving at high speeds is a terribly inefficient way to do it.
Sure can be fun, though.
Let me show you something.
She dug into her handbag a little more and came out with some folded-up sheets of paper.
I spoke of how people generally act in response to their surroundings. Remember our discussion about the roughs? And how there are often more lawkeepers per person there than here? And yet crime is more prevalent. That's the result of environment. Look here.
She handed over some of the pages.
This is a report, she said. I'm putting it together myself. It's about the nature of crime as related to environment. See here, this discusses the major factors that have decreased crime in some sections of the city. Hiring more constables, hanging more criminals, that sort of thing. They are of medium efficacy.
What's this at the bottom? Waxillium asked.
Renovation, she said with a deep smile. This case is where a wealthy man, Lord Joshin himself, purchased several parcels of land in one of the less reputable areas. He began renovating and cleaning up. Crime went way down. The people didn't change, just their environment. Now that area is a safe and respectable section of the city. We call it the broken windows theory. If a man sees a broken window in a building, he's more likely to rob or commit other crimes, since he figures nobody cares. If all the windows are maintained, all the streets clean, all the buildings washed, then crime goes down. Just as a hot day can make a person irritable, it appears that a run-down area can make an ordinary man into a criminal.
Curious, Waxillium said.
Of course, she said, this isn't the only answer. There will always be people who don't respond to their surroundings. They fascinate me, as I've mentioned. Anyway, I've always been good with numbers and figures. I see patterns like this and wonder. Cleaning up a few streets can be cheaper than employing more constables, but can actually decrease crime to a greater degree.
Waxillium looked over the reports, then back at Marcy. She had a flush of excitement in her cheeks. There was something captivating about her. How long had they been here? He hesitated, then pulled out his pocket watch.
Oh, she said, glancing at the watch. We shouldn't be chatting like this. Not with poor Steris in their hands.
We can't do more until Wayne returns, Waxillium said. In fact, he should have been back by now.
He is,
Wayne's voice said from the hallway outside. Marcy jumped, letting out a faint yelp. Waxillium sighed.
How long have you been out there?
Wayne's head poked around the corner, wearing a constable's hat.
Oh, a little while. Seemed like you two were having some kind of smart people moment. Didn't want to interfere.
Wise of you. Your stupidity can be infectious.
Don't use your fancy words round me, son.
Wayne strolled in. Though he wore the constable's hat, he was otherwise normally dressed in his duster and trousers, dueling canes at his hips. Did you succeed? Waxillium asked, standing up, then reaching down to help Marcy to her feet.
Sure did. I got some scones, Wayne grinned. And the dirty Connors even paid for them.
Wayne.
Yes?
We're dirty Connors.
Not no more, he said proudly. We are independent citizens with a mind toward civic duty. And eating the scones of dirty Connors.
Marcy grimaced.
They don't sound that appetizing when described that way.
Oh, they were good.
Wayne reached into the pocket of his duster.
Here, I brought you some. Got a little mushed up in my pocket, though.
No, really,
she said, paling. Wayne, however, chuckled and brought out a paper that he waved at Waxillium.
Location of the Vanisher's hideout in the city, along with the name of their recruiter.
Really?
Marcy said eagerly, rushing over to take the paper.
How did you do this?
Whiskey and magic, Wayne said.
In other words, Waxillium said, walking up and reading the paper over Marcy's shoulder, Wayne did a lot of fast talking. Nice work.
We need to get going,
Marcy said, urgent.
Go there, get Steris, and...
They won't be there anymore, Waxillium said, taking the paper. Not after having several of their members captured. Wayne, did you manage to get this without the constable's hearing? He looked offended.
What do you think?
Waxillium nodded, rubbing his chin. We should probably go soon. Get to the scene before it gets too cold.
But,
Marcy said,
the constables...
We'll drop them an anonymous tip once I've seen the place, Waxillium said.
Won't be needed, Wayne added. I set a fuse.
For when?
Nightfall.
Nice.
You can show your appreciation with a big fat nugget of a rare and expensive metal, Wayne said.
On the desk, Waxillium said, folding the paper and sliding it into his vest pocket. Wayne walked over, glancing at the apparatus set up on the desk.
I'm not sure if I want to touch any of this, mate. I'm rather fond of all my fingers.
It's not going to explode, Wayne, he said dryly.
You said that it happened once, Waxillium said. Do you know how bloody annoying it is to regrow fingers, Wax? If it's on par with your complaining, then it's likely appalling indeed.
I'm just saying, Wayne said, scanning the desk until he found the bottle of Bend alloy flakes. He snatched that, then backed away warily.
The most innocent-looking of things have a tendency to explode around you, and bloke has to be cautious.
He shook the bottle.
This isn't much.
Don't act spoiled, Waxillium said. That's far more than I could have gotten you on short notice if we'd been out in the roughs. Drop the hat. Let's go look at this foundry your notes mention.
We can use my carriage if you like, Marcy said.
To the side, Tiom walked in, carrying a basket in one hand and a tray with tea in the other. He set the basket beside the door, then set the tray on the table and began pouring tea. Waxillium eyed Marcy.
You want to come? I thought you said you wanted to leave the shooting to men like me.
You said they won't be there, she replied, so there's really no danger.
They still want you, Wayne noted. They tried to grab you at the dinner. It'll be dangerous for you.
And they'd likely shoot either one of you without blinking, she said. So how will it be any less dangerous for you?
I suppose it ain't, Wayne admitted.
Tiom walked over, bringing a cup of tea for Waxillium on a small tray. Wayne plucked it off with a grin, though Tiom tried to pull the tray away.
How convenient, Wayne said, holding the teacup. Wax, why didn't you ever get me one of these chaps back in Weathering?
The butler shot him a scowl, then hurried back to the table to prepare another cup. Waxillium considered Marcy. There was something he was missing, something important. Something about what Wayne had said.
Why did they take you? Waxillium asked Marcy. There were better targets at that party. Women closer to the bloodlines they wanted.
You said she might have been a decoy to throw us off, Wayne said, dumping some Bend alloy into his teacup, then downing the entire thing in one draft.
Yes, Waxillium said, looking into her eyes and seeing a flash of something there. She turned away. But if that were the case, they'd have wanted to take someone that wasn't close to the same bloodline at all. Not one who was a near cousin. He pursed his lips, and then it clicked.
Ah, you're illegitimate then. Sterus's half-sister by Lord Harms, I assume.
She blushed.
Yes.
Wayne whistled.
Wonderful show, Wax. Usually I wait to call someone a bastard until the second date.
He eyed Marcy.
Third, if she's pretty.
Waxillium felt a sudden burst of shame. Of course, I didn't mean...
It's quite all right, she said softly.
It made sense. Marcy and Lord Harms had grown so uncomfortable when Steris had spoken of mistresses. And then there was the specific clause about them in the contract. Steris was accustomed to infidelity on the part of a lord. That also explained why Harms was paying for the education and housing of Steris's cousin. Lady Marcy, Waxillium said, taking her hand, perhaps my years in the roughs affected me more than I'd assumed. There was a time when I gave thought to my words before speaking them. Forgive me.
I am what I am, Lord Waxillium, she said. And I have grown comfortable with it.
It was still crude of me.
You needn't apologize.
Huh,
Wayne said thoughtfully.
Tea's poisoned.
With that, he toppled to the ground. Marcy gasped, immediately going to his side. Waxillium spun, looking at Tiom just as the butler turned from his supposed tea preparations and leveled a pistol at Waxillium. There was no time for thought. Waxillium burned steel. He kept it in him when he thought he might be in danger, and pushed on the third button of his vest. He always wore one made of steel there, to use either for restoring his metal reserves or as a weapon. It burst from his vest, streaking across the room and striking Tiom in the chest just as he pulled the trigger. The shot went wild. Neither the bullet nor the gun registered as metal to Waxillium's allomantic senses. Aluminum, then. Tiom stumbled to the side and dropped the gun, pulling himself along the bookshelf in an attempt to flee. He left a line of blood on the floor before collapsing at the door. Waxillium dropped to his knees beside Wayne. Marcy had jumped at the gunshot and was staring at the gasping butler. Wayne, Waxillium said, lifting his friend's head. Wayne's eyes fluttered open.
Poison. Oh, I hate poison. Worse than losing a finger, I tell you.
Lord Waxillium,
Marcy said, alarmed. Wayne will be fine, Waxillium said, relaxing back. So long as he can talk and he has some ferrochemical reserves, he can pull through just about anything.
I'm not talking about him. The butler.
Waxillium looked up with a start, realizing that the dying Tiome was fiddling with the basket he'd brought in. The man reached a bloodied hand into it and pulled on something.
Wayne, Waxillium cried. Bubble, now!
Tiome fell back. The basket erupted in a blossoming ball of fire. And then froze.
Oh, hell,
Wayne said, rolling over to look at the explosion in progress.
I warned you. I said things are always blowing up around you.
I refuse to take responsibility for this one.
He's your butler,
Wayne said, coughing and crawling to his knees.
Blarick. It wasn't even good tea.
It's getting bigger,
Marcy said, alarmed as she pointed at the explosion. The fire blast had vaporized the basket before Wayne got his bubble up. The blast wave was slowly expanding outward, burning away the carpet, destroying the doorframe and the bookshelves. The butler himself had already been engulfed.
Damn, Wayne said. That's a big one.
Probably meant to look like an accident with my metallurgy equipment, Waxillium said. Burning our bodies, covering the murder.
Shall we go out the windows, then?
That blast is going to be hard to outrun, Waxillium said thoughtfully.
You could do it. Just gotta push hard enough.
Against what, Wayne? I don't see any good anchors in that direction. Besides, if I launch us backward that fast, going out the window is going to shred us and rip our bodies apart.
Gentlemen, Marcy said, voice growing frantic, it's getting bigger.
Wayne can't stop time, Waxillium said, just slow it greatly. And he can't move the bubble once he's made it.
Look, Wayne said, just blow the wall out. Push against the nails in the window frames and blast open the side of the building. Then you can shoot us out that direction without us running into anything.
Do you even listen to yourself when you say these things? Waxillium asked, hands on hips as he regarded his friend.
That's brick and stone. If I push too hard, I'll just throw myself backward into the explosion.
It's getting really, really close, Marcy said.
So make yourself heavier, Wayne said.
Heavy enough so that I don't move when an entire wall, a well-built, extremely heavy one, is ripped off a building?
Sure.
The floor would never be able to take it, Waxillium said. It would shatter and... He trailed off. Both of them looked down. Snapping into motion, Waxillium grabbed Marcy, pulling her over with a yelp. He rolled onto his back, holding her tightly atop him. The explosion was taking up most of their field of vision now, having consumed a large portion of the room. It swelled closer and closer, glowing with angry yellow light, like a bubbling, bursting pastry expanding in an enormous oven.
What are we?
Marcy said.
Hold on,
Waxillium said. He amplified his weight. Ferrochemy didn't work like allomancy. The two categories of power were often lumped together, but in many ways they were opposites. In allomancy, the power came from the metal itself, and there was a limit to how much you could do at once. Wayne couldn't compress time beyond a certain amount. Waxillium could push only so hard on a piece of metal. Ferrochemy was powered by a sort of cannibalism, where you consumed part of yourself for later use. Make yourself weigh half as much for 10 days, and you could make yourself 1.5 times as heavy for a near equal amount of time. Or you could make yourself twice as heavy for half that time, or 4 times as heavy for a quarter of that time. Or extremely heavy for a few brief moments. Waxillium drew into himself weight he'd stored in his metal mines across days spent going around at 3/4 weight. He became heavy as a boulder, then as heavy as a building, then heavier. All this weight was focused on one small section of the floor. The wood crunched, then burst, exploding downward. Waxillium dropped out of Wayne's bubble of speed and hit real time, the shift jostling him. The next few moments were a blur. He heard the awesome sound of the explosion above. It hit with a wave of force. He released his metal mind and pushed against the nails in the floor below them, trying to slow himself and Marcy. He didn't have time to do it well. They crashed into the floor of the next story down, and something heavy landed on them, driving the breath from Waxillium's lungs. There was glaring brightness and a burst of heat. Then, it was over. Waxillium lay dazed, ears ringing. He groaned, then realized that Marcy was clinging to him, shaking. He held her close for a moment, blinking. Were they still in danger? What had fallen on them? Wayne, he thought. He forced himself to move, rolling over and setting Marcy aside. The floor beneath them had been crushed practically to splinters, the nails flattened to little discs. Part of his downward push must have been while he still had the increased weight. They were covered with chips of wood and plaster dust. The ceiling was a wreck, sections of wood smoldering, bits of ash and debris wafting down. There was nothing left of the hole he'd broken. The blast had consumed it and the floor around it. Wincing, he moved Wayne. His friend had fallen on them and blocked the brunt of the explosion from above. His duster had been shredded, his back exposed, blackened and burned, blood dribbling down his sides. Marcy raised a hand to her mouth. She was still trembling, her golden brown hair tangled, eyes wide. No, Waxillium thought, uncertain if he should try to turn his friend over or not. Please, no. Wayne had used a portion of his health to recover from the poison, and last night he'd said he only had enough left for one bullet wound. Anxious, he felt at Wayne's neck. There was a faint pulse. Waxillium closed his eyes and let out a deep breath. As he watched, the wounds on Wayne's back began to draw closed. It was a slow process. A blood maker using ferrochemical healing was limited by how fast he wanted the power to work. Recovering quickly required a much greater expenditure of health. If Wayne didn't have much left, he'd need to work at a slow pace. Waxillium left him to it. Wayne would be suffering great pain, but there was nothing he could do. Instead, he took Marcy's arm. She was still trembling. It's all right, Waxillium said, his voice sounding odd and muffled because of the explosion's effect on his hearing. Wayne is healing. Are you injured?
I...
She looked dazed.
2 in 3 sufferers of great trauma are unable to correctly identify their own injuries as a result of stress or the body's own natural coping mechanisms covering the pain.
Tell me if any of this hurts, Waxillium said, feeling at her ankles, then legs, then arms for breaks. He carefully prodded her sides for broken ribs, though it was difficult through the thick cloth of her dress. She slowly came out of her daze, then looked at him and pulled him close, tucking her head against his chest. He hesitated, then wrapped his arms around her and held her as she steadied her breath, obviously trying to get hold of her emotions. Behind them, Wayne started coughing. He stirred, then groaned and lay still, letting the healing continue. They'd fallen into a spare bedroom. The building was burning, but not too badly. Likely the constables would soon be called. Nobody came running, Waxillium thought. The other staff. Are they all right? Or were they part of it? His mind was still trying to catch up. Tiome, a man who, as far as he knew, had served his uncle faithfully for decades, had tried to kill him. 3 times. Marcy pulled back.
I think I've composed myself. Thank you.
He nodded to her, pulling out his handkerchief and handing it over, then knelt by Wayne. The man's back was crusted with blood and burned skin, but it had been lifted and raised as scabs, new skin forming underneath.
Is it bad?
Wayne asked, eyes still closed. You'll pull through.
I meant the duster.
Oh. Well, you're gonna need a really big patch this time. Wayne snorted, then pushed himself up and moved into a sitting position. He winced several times during the process, then finally opened his eyes. Trails of tears were running down the side of his face.
I told you, Wayne said.
innocent things are always exploding around you, Wax. You kept your fingers this time. Great. I can still strangle you.
Waxillium smiled, resting his hand on his friend's arm. Thanks. Wayne nodded.
I apologize for having to fall on you two.
I'll forgive you, under the circumstances.
Waxillium glanced at Marcy. She sat with her arms wrapped around herself, hunched forward, face pale. She saw his scrutiny, then lowered her arms as if forcing herself to be strong, and began to stand up.
It's all right, Waxillium said. You can take more time.
I'll be well, she said,
though it was hard to make out the words as his hearing was still dulled.
I'm unaccustomed to people trying to kill me.
You don't ever get accustomed to it, Wayne said. Trust me.
He took a deep breath, then pulled off the remnants of his duster and shirt. Then he turned his burned back to Waxillium.
You mind?
You may want to turn away, Marcy, Waxillium said.
She frowned, but didn't look away. So he grabbed the burned layer at Wayne's shoulder and, with a jerk, ripped the skin off his back. It came free in almost a single complete sheet. Wayne grunted. New skin had formed underneath, pink and fresh, but it couldn't finish healing properly until the old stiff burned layer had been removed. Waxillium tossed it aside.
Oh, Lord of Harmony, Marcy said, raising a hand to her mouth. I think I might be sick.
I warned you, Waxillium said.
I thought you were referring to his burns. I didn't realize you were going to tear off his entire back.
It feels much better now.
Wayne rolled his arms in his shoulders, now shirtless. He was lean and muscled, and he wore a pair of gold metal-lined bracers on his upper arms. His trousers had been singed, but were mostly intact. He reached down, pulling one of his dueling canes out of the wreckage. The other was still at his waist.
Now they owe me a hat and a duster. Where's the rest of the house staff?
I've been wondering that myself, Waxillium said. I'll do a quick search and see if anyone's hurt. You get Marcy out the back. Sneak through the grounds and out the garden gate. I'll meet you there.
Sneak?
Marcy asked.
Whoever hired that bloke to kill us, Wayne said, will be expecting that explosion to mean we've gone to meet Iron Eyes.
Right, Waxillium said. We'll have an hour or two while the house is searched and Tiom is identified, if there's enough left to identify. During that time, we'll be thought dead.
It will give us a little time to think, Wayne said. Come on, we should move quick.
He led Marcy down the back stairs toward the grounds. She still seemed dazed. Waxillium's ears felt like they were stuffed with cotton. He suspected the three of them had been shouting their conversation. Wayne was right. You never got used to people trying to kill you. Waxillium began a quick search of the house and started refilling his metal mines as he did. He became much lighter, about half his normal weight. Any more than that, and it became difficult to walk normally, even with clothing and guns weighing him down. He was practiced at it, though. During his search, he found Lemmy and Miss Grimes unconscious but alive in the pantry. A glance out the window showed the coachman, Krent, standing with his hands on his head and looking at the burning building with eyes wide. Of the other house staff, the maids, the errand boys, the cook, there was no sign. They might have been close enough to the blast to be caught in it, but Waxillium didn't think that likely. Probably Tiom, who had charge over household staff, had sent away everyone that he reasonably could, then had drugged the others and stuffed them someplace safe. It indicated a desire to ensure that nobody was hurt. Well, nobody but Waxillium and his guests. In two quick trips, Waxillium carried the unconscious women out into the back garden, being careful not to be seen. Hopefully, they would soon be discovered by Krent or the constables. After that, Waxillium fetched a pair of revolvers from the closet on the main floor and got a shirt and jacket from the laundry for Wayne. He wished he could look for his old trunk with his Styrians, but there wasn't time. He slipped out the back door and crossed the garden on two light feet.
Each step of the way, he was increasingly bothered by what had happened. It was horrible for someone to try to kill you. It was worse when the attack came from someone you knew. It seemed implausible that the bandits would have been able to contact and bribe Tiom so quickly. How could they have even known that an aging butler would be amenable? The groom or gardener would have been a far safer choice. Something more was going on here. From Waxilium's first day in the city, Tiom had been trying to discourage him from getting involved in local lawkeeping. On the night before the ball, he'd pointedly tried to get Waxilium to drop the subject of the robberies. Whoever was behind this, the butler had been working with them for some time. And that meant they'd been watching Waxilium all along.